Very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 3rd June 2021, Thursday class. So we will be continuing with our sharing from this book, The Essence of Infinite Meaning, Teachings from the Adapted Verse of the Sutra of Infinite Meanings, Liang Yi Jing. We are at page 258. The last paragraph, which is also a new adapted verse, just relax body and mind, maintain some form of stable posture, then we can proceed with our half an hour of awareness based meditation. We are off the light, then you all can start your meditation. Just relax body and mind, completely relax, be at ease. Then silence your mind, silence everything. Don't try to know, don't try to do anything, just maintain silence. When you are silent without thought, naturally you are aware. Then the awareness, you have to maintain it, maintain the awareness for as long as you can. Then for those who already can develop the stability of mindfulness, the next support is trust. Trust your nature to do. No more interference from the thought process, the thinking. Just that silent nature away. Relax. And that nature will move. It will detect. It will develop its own understanding and movement. So trust is a very difficult step four to develop unless you have very stable awareness nature or mindfulness within. This trust can only happen when you are completely silent, quiet, without thought, without chattering, without any mental verbalization or sankhara activity. But before you can have that stability, you train your mind to be aware first. Awareness is step one. So relax body and mind, silence everything, maintain awareness for as long as you can. The awareness nature is the true mind, the meditative mind, the silent mind. So when you can relax, maintain awareness until your mind slow down, the sankhara activity, the thinking slow down, and return to its original state before the stirring, before the arising of thought. That is your true mind, your true nature, the awareness within. So the awareness nature is the mind that you use to develop wisdom, understanding, to meditate, to insight into phenomena, to awaken. Only that mind can observe, develop understanding. If you don't have that silent mind, you will be lost in thought. Because man can only do one thing at a time. Either you are completely silent and aware, means you are sensitive, you are aware of whatever that arises or goes on within your own form and mind and nature. If you cannot be in that state, then you are lost in thought. Preoccupied with your thought process, you become heedless. You think a lot. That's why if you don't train your mind to be aware, you will become heedless. You will be lost in thought, preoccupied with all the thinking, the verbalization, the chattering, the self-dialogue. And all this is very typical of a heedless person's activity. So heedlessness is very dangerous. Like the Buddha said, the heedless are as if dead. Heedlessness is the path to the dead. Whereas you train your mind to be aware, to be mindful, to be heedful, then you will realize the deathless, the heedful never die. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Dhammapada verse 21. So to meditate is to develop heedfulness. Otherwise you don't stand a chance. Otherwise you become heedless. And you are as if dead. You cannot meditate. So to meditate, you need to be heedful. And to be heedful, you need to be ever mindful, constantly meditative. So first part is to be ever mindful. To be ever mindful, you have to start with training yourself to be mindful first. Then stabilize that mindfulness to be ever mindful. Then use that to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is basically the Noble Eightfold Path. Use it to observe, to be mindful of whatever that arises. Then anchor it to the four foundations. Kaya Nupassana, mindfulness of Kaya activity. Then Vedana Nupassana, mindfulness of Vedana or feeling, sensation. Then Chitta Nupassana, mindful of mind state, mental states, mental movement, mental activity, mental intention, mental volition, etc. Then finally is mindfulness of Dhamma, the truth that the Buddha has taught us, or the essential Dhamma that is classified under Dhamma Nupassana. Basically, when you have the ability to anchor your mind to these four foundations, then it prepares you to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness, which is step 8 of Abhijja Sutta. So all these are connected in the teaching. So here we are here to train ourselves to be aware. That is step number 1. That's why before that you must learn how to relax. Then silent everything. Don't try to know to do anything. Silent the mind. Means no verbalization, no chattering, no thinking, no activity of the mundane mind. Just silent and maintain the awareness. Be at ease. Just let things speak. Whatever arise, aware, finish. Aware, finish. And let that silence stabilize. Initially, if you are not trained, if you have not developed the awareness, you will think a lot. Sankara activity will arise. Never mind, let it arise. Because during the daytime, you are not heedful, you are hardly mindful. That's why you think a lot. The other reason is your spiritual faculties, the 5 spiritual faculties, they are not stable. When your spiritual faculties are stable, then your mind is always in the meditative state. It will have sadha, virya, sati, and samadhi. That's how it is always mindful, collected, and unwavering. And that mind can meditate, can insight into phenomena, can awaken. So our purpose here is to train our mind to be mindful, stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then continue to relax and stabilize it until it's collected and unwavering, so that sati and samadhi will arise, so that you understand clearly what that true mind is, what that silent mind is, what that meditative mind is. That is the first hallmark of awakening. You must reach a state of no thought. Only your true mind is without thought. It's just aware. That nature is just aware. there is no one inside there. But this awareness teacher is not a being, not a person. It cannot come out and live life. It's just a nature within that can help you develop wisdom, awakening, understanding, meditate, observe, so that you understand clearly who are you, what are you, so that you can understand the two aspects of existence, mundane and super mundane, the five aggregate of form and mind is part of your coming nature, but that one is not real. That one is dependent originating condition arising causal phenomena. That one is impermanent. You grasp, you cling, you suffer. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity that you can grasp onto, cling onto, hold onto and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. That's why the Buddha said it has a anatta characteristic, non-self characteristic. So anatta means non-self, not a permanent unchanging entity. And because of that, everything is just following nature's law of dependent origination. All phenomena arise because of condition. Condition arising cause phenomena. And because of that, it has the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, non-self. Therefore, it's not real, empty. Whatever there is impermanent cannot be real. It arises and it passes away. When condition arises, it manifests. When condition continues to sustain itself, it continues to exist. But when condition ceases to be, it just ceases to be. So how can it be real? How can it be you? So all these are the Buddhist teaching, the understanding. But without mindfulness, without awareness, you cannot understand all this. So the purpose of meditation is to develop this understanding. So today I give you more instruction to develop understanding. When you are free, you go back and listen to this many times and make use of this to develop the understanding to meditate. You can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner calmness, inner peace, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind states that you need to develop the daily mindfulness, to live life, to develop stability of daily mindfulness, to be aware, so that you are heedful, aware, most of the time. No Mara, or evil beings, can gain entrance, nor can any deviant views corrupt it. Impermanence, non-self, suffering, emptiness, and the four states of existence of all phenomena are inconceivable. The nature and appearances of the Dhamma are fundamentally empty and still, neither appearing nor disappearing, neither coming nor going. So this adapter verse is a description of the enlightened nature, the characteristic of those conditioned phenomena. That's why when you understand all this, its wisdom is very stable. Then it realizes that all conditioned existence is empty, not real, not what you think. So empty nature of existence, then they also have the understanding of the four state of existence of all phenomena, means the four phase cycles. Yeah. The birth, the growth, the decaying, and the ceasing. So the growth and the decaying is the sustainable phase. So just like a human being, right? The moment we are born, there is this birth. Then we grow. Then we reach puberty. Then our growth hormone slow down and stop. Then that growth phase end. Then we were starts to grow old or decay. We call it the decay. Going downhill that phase because the growth hormone is no more. Just like a plant, a tree. Initially very young from the seed, the seedling with all the conditions. The growth phase, it will grow. Then when it reaches maturity, it will not grow anymore. It continue to renew itself. Then it grow old. And finally, it will return to nature. So all these are the four phase cycle. Then when conditions cease to be, it cease to be. That's why the birth and the death and the sustaining. The sustaining has two phases, the growing and the decaying. So all this understanding will be there when you awaken. You will understand the three universal characteristics of four of phenomena, the four states of existence of all phenomena. Then basically because of the three universal characteristics, existence is not what you think. That's why empty nature existence, emptiness, sunyata, become very clear. Then the nature or appearances of the Dhamma, fundamentally, they are empty and still because that nature always the same, never change. It's only the manifestation, the phenomenal world of consciousness, the arising, evolving, movement, cycles of birth and death, the coming and the going, based on nature's law. That's why we have the conditioned world, conditioned arising Dhamma, each year you wave out. So basically, they are fundamentally empty and still. That's why within the pneumonal, there is the phenomenal. And this phenomenal, they move, transform, arise and pass away within that pneumonal nature. The pneumonal nature is our oneness nature, our true nature, or we call it the original nature. That one is the unconditioned. So when you understand all those things, then you will come to know that basically they are empty and still. They neither appear or disappear, neither coming nor going. So if you listen to all this and you go and study the Heart Sutta, you realize they match. They are similar. Bhagavad Gita is talking about that nature, the oneness nature, the true nature. So this adapted verse is for enlightened being to understand. That's why I say when you are in this state, the wisdom will protect you. No Mara or evil being can gain entrance to confuse you and delude you. Nor can any wrong view, deviant view, corrupt it because of the wisdom. Then the wisdom that has all this understanding is the one that can transform the living being, the form and mind. The form and mind that have realized this will have the wisdom connected to it. Then it can use that understanding and wisdom to live life. So this is what the Dhamma is. This is what the Buddha Dhamma, the teaching is all about. If you understand this, you will understand the Buddha's teaching. Okay, now I will go into the commentaries. As we learn the Buddha's way, if we have not established proper faith, see, faith is very important, then even if true Dhamma is in front of us, we still will not be able to comprehend it. This is very true. Without the spiritual faculty of faith, you cannot comprehend. Very strange. I came to realize this also in the early days of my cultivation. It's only when my faith becomes very strong, then the spiritual teaching becomes clear. Without that faith, in the Buddha and his teaching and your teacher and those who have taught you and guide you well, you actually cannot penetrate the Dhamma. But because of your faith, you have no doubt. You are not confused. The hindrance is not there. And that faith drives you to diligently arise the virya to cultivate. Then you will develop stability of mindfulness. So sadha leading to virya, virya leading to sati, sati leading you to samadhi. Then wisdom will arise. The five spiritual faculties will fall into place. Before the five spiritual faculties fall into place, you cannot understand spiritual teaching. You cannot develop the cultivation. Because these five spiritual faculties can help you to root out the five mental hindrance. And without the mental hindrance, your mind is always in the meditative state. That's why you are always with your silent mind, your true mind, your meditative mind. That's the reason why the spiritual faculties are very important. So like what is stated here, as we learn Buddha's way, if you are not firmly established in proper faith, then even if the true teaching, true Dhamma is in front of us, we still will not be able to comprehend it. Now you start to understand why in the early days when you are subject to the Buddhist teaching, when you think you are cultivating or developing the meditation, what you have been exposed to is just Dhamma knowledge, Dhamma concept, thought-based learning. It's not the true Dhamma because the faith is not there. The spiritual faculties are not there. Why are they called spiritual faculties? Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. They are called spiritual faculties because these are mental states that can allow you to understand spiritual teachings. That's why without Sadha leading to Virya, stabilizing the Sati, developing Samadhi, wisdom cannot arise. Spiritual understanding cannot arise. So all this is very clear. Then I read on, you will understand. However, if our mind can always maintain proper, the word is not believer, proper right view, right understanding, they will not deviate and no Mara can come near to us. Means you have already awakened, developed the wisdom. As we interact with others in the course of our spiritual cultivation, we will encounter many different conditions and situations, and often faced with many challenges from Mara. Mara means evil beings or beings that are not easy to deal with. Mara actually refers to, here the author say afflictions. Affliction because these are evil beings that condition the evil roots and make you evil. That's why when you become evil, you will commit evil. Then karmically, when the karmic friction come, it will lead to affliction because the evil roots are root of all evil. It make you evil. Then you will be afflicted. Suffering will be the result. So on top of affliction, we also face many other hardships and difficulties. But when you have wisdom, all this, you can transcend, even not affect you. But before the wisdom is developed, you have to confront all this, go through all this and develop the understanding. Until finally, when you are connected, then you develop the understanding. then you can go beyond all this. So on top of affliction, you also have to face many other hardships and difficulties. When we encounter Maras, if we can overcome them with compassion and wisdom, and this one is very important, you must overcome them with compassion and wisdom, not with anger and hatred or emotion. So this understanding is very important. So compassion and wisdom, they go hand in hand. Without wisdom, there is no true compassion. Without wisdom, there is no true teachings. Our mind will not be disturbed, and we will be able to adhere to right mindfulness. That's why, again, mindfulness or awareness is very important, as well as proper faith, vows, and practices. So to go the Bodhisattva way, we must develop proper, very stable faith. And our vows must be strong, and our practice must be consistent, based on sincerity, faith, and perseverance. The moment before the Buddha attained enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, countless Mara appeared before him, but the Buddha remained unwavering and subdued them all one by one. Thus, no Mara can gain entrance, nor can any deviant view corrupt the teachings. Because we resolve to learn the Bodhisattva way and transform sentient beings, we are bound to face many hardships. But the word difficulty or hardship should not exist in our dictionary. As long as we stay firm in our faith, we can overcome every hardship and vanquish Maras. We can conquer any obstacle. Then, like the Buddha, we can realize the fundamental truth of the world, which are the three universal characteristics of impermanent, non-self, suffering state, and empty nature of existence or emptiness. When we analyze sentient beings suffering, in the end we find only emptiness, which is very true. However, in emptiness there is wondrous existence. According to Heart Sutta, also is mentioned, Zhen Kong Miao Yu. In true emptiness, there is wondrous or wonderful existence, or true emptiness is wonderful existence. The false state of existence of all phenomena are inconceivable. We often talk about the three principles and the false state of existence, that is, arising or birth, abiding, changing, and ceasing are the four states of our thoughts and emotion of our phenomena. These are the principle of the mind. Our thoughts have no fixed nature. Our mind are not settled. Thus, we are influenced by external situation, sometimes giving rise to good thoughts and sometimes giving rise to negative thoughts. All living beings follow the principle of life and go through the four state of birth, old age, sickness, and death. When we are children, we are pure and innocent. As young adults, we are youthful and appealing. As we get old, we become wrinkled and gray, hunched over and slow. From the moment we are born, our external appearance changes constantly. This is what we call goes the way of nature. That one is only true for our physical body. Formation, existence, decay, and disappearance are the four states of material thing. All objects in the world, and even the cycles of stars in the universe, follow the principle of matter. Nothing can exist forever. With advance in modern astronomy and cosmology, We now know that stars eventually explode and perish. Here, explode means the Big Bang, or what we call the supernova. The supernova. It's towards the end of its lifespan. It bursts into very strong. It is like a very, very powerful eruption, supernova. So when that thing happens, it releases a lot of energy. Then it becomes a black hole. It collapses back into a black hole. That's why the supernova is the last surge of energy and light. Very powerful. And after that, it collapses into a very dense black hole. That's how they say the star die. Then the black hole, everything will be drawn in. Even the speed of light cannot escape the black hole, because the gravitational pull from the black hole has gone beyond the speed of light. Means like our planet Earth, because we have our gravity, so we are trapped within our gravitational influence or pull, because we couldn't reach the escape velocity. To escape from the gravitational influence of our Mother Earth, scientists has came to understand that we need an escape velocity of 5,000 miles per second. That's why the rocket propulsion technology, you have to accelerate the rocket, create the propulsion to accelerate that rocket until it reaches the escape velocity and beyond for it to escape from this gravitational pull. So similarly, if the planet is bigger, like the sun or what, the escape velocity is even bigger. But when it becomes so dense and so intense until the escape velocity exceeds the speed of light, you know the speed of light is 186,000 miles per second. If you can reach that speed, you can escape from most planets or star systems influence. But when the black hole collapses and becomes very, very intense, it can reach a state of density that is way beyond the speed of light. So during that time, nothing escapes. Everything will be drawn into. And scientists until today still don't know what will happen. Whatever that went in, they don't know what will happen. Even Stephen Hawking also, he made a joke out of it. He said maybe like spaghetti. You go in, it becomes like spaghetti. Everything is sucked in and drawn in and collapsed inside there. Then after this black hole had enough of all these things, it seems it will start over again. Then the new existence will start. Because after a period of black hole means inactivity, nothing can exist. Then it reached the saturation. Then during that time, it start over again. That's why scientists believe there is a beginning of time where all this, they create this theory of the Big Bang. Big Bang is, it will start all again, the burst of energy, the singularity, from there the expanding universe start again. Then later on it collapses back. That's why birth, growth, decay, or sustainment, then cessation. So all this, the scientists have developed quite good understanding. So when we understand all this, we can understand how immense our universe is. I will read on, then maybe you understand. All objects in the world and even the cycles of stars in the universe follow the principle of matter. Nothing can exist forever, which is true. With advance in modern astronomy and cosmology, one of science, we now know that stars eventually, so here explode means the supernova, and perish. Then it starts again, the Big Bang. The Earth will also experience the stages of formation, existence, decay, and disappearance. All things in the world, including you and me and our sentient beings, are fundamentally impermanent. All phenomena exist in a state of impermanent non-self, suffering, and emptiness, which are inseparable from the four states of existence. This is very difficult to conceive of. That's why without the wisdom of the great beings or the great cultivator like the Samasambuddha, it's not easy to understand all this. That's why the Buddha said inconceivable is the beginning of the first thought of ignorant that conditioned living being into what they are now. Then all this manifestation, you can never understand them unless you have returned to the oneness nature, the singularity and the perfection, everything. So this is the extent of understanding of the Buddhist teaching. Is very, very extensive and ultimate. It encompasses everything. Then I will read on that. In addition, the nature and appearances of the Dhamma are fundamentally empty and still. So, on the contrary, despite all this fantastic movement, scientific discovery, basically, fundamentally, the nature and appearance of the Dhamma are empty and still. This one you need wisdom to understand. The Dhamma is fundamentally simple, very true. So why did the Buddha have to teach or give teaching for more than 45 years, continuously explaining it to sentient beings? Actually, he did this in the hope that everyone would understand that the mind, the Buddha, and all sentient beings are no different in their nature. That's why you start to understand later on when you have developed the cultivation. They used to say this in the Mahayana teaching. For Jusu Sing, Sing Jusu For. Means Buddha is mind, mind is Buddha. Wu Hui Sing, Jiu Wu Hui For. You cannot understand mind, you cannot understand the Buddha or the Buddha nature. So basically, like what the commentary here say, the Buddha and mind are no difference when you understand they are the same. So the mind, the Buddha, and all sentient beings, we have the Buddha nature within. The aim of all of his various teaching was to explain that the nature and appearances of all things return to the state of emptiness and stillness. But the Dhamma is not a thing that can be seen. Very true. We can only understand this principle by experiencing them and putting them into practice to realization, awakening. That's why it's not easy. Then all this, you need to silence your mind. Develop the ability to connect to our true nature, true mind, through the gateway. Then to realize the unconditioned, the oneness nature within. Then when we can be one with everything, then there is a beginning of possibility of understanding oneness nature. And that one, you need the form and mind to come. Without the form and mind, you cannot connect. And when you cannot connect, you cannot understand the spiritual nature. Because whatever you inherit from the spiritual nature can only arise when you develop the meditation and start to connect to that true nature. And to connect to the true nature, you need the vehicle and tool, the form and mind. That's why it's not so clear-cut, so easy. Without that karmically conditioned form and mind, you cannot arise in the existential world. That vehicle and tool is what you need to arise, to manifest, to come. And so this is the vehicle and the tool for you to come. Then when you come, you must know how to develop the meditative understanding and the training to connect. From there, you can go in. But after that, when you realize and understand all this, that for my mind has to go. That's why not much time left. Just like by this nature. It take birth in the year 1954, condition the form of mind through my vows, my aspiration, my understanding and my cultivation. Then it arises with all the understanding and the karmic conditioning. Then after that, it starts to evolve and become what it is. It gone through all those years of cultivation, practice, perfection. Then when in the year 1989, at the age of 35, it connect. Then only my nature starts to develop the full understanding of this whole process. Then let's say this form of mind can continue to live until maybe 80 years old, whatever beyond is bonus. 80 years old is 45 years of good life, good understanding, just like what the Buddha. He also became enlightened under the Bodhi tree at the age of 35. Then age 80, he parinibbana. Then after that, the whole thing gone, cease. But Sakyamuni Buddha's nature is always there. Sakyamuni Buddha's karmic nature is always there. So this one never changed. That's why the whole of cultivation is not easy to comprehend and conceive. It's because of this. It involves the conditioned and the unconditioned. Then it involves the karmic vehicle and tool. Then it's not something that you can be with. You cannot be with that true nature all the time and manifest like a living being or human being. Cannot. Yeah, that one is not a being. That one cannot come out and live like. That one can be realized through that form of mind. You need the vehicle and tool to connect, to meditate, to develop all the understanding, to inherit all the spiritual understanding, to develop full understanding of what happened. But then, how long can this form of mind last? That's why for cultivators of the way who have the understanding, like my nature and all those great beings, they come with understanding and they can evolve all this very fast so that they can actually have enough time to understand all this and share all this so that in future other beings can also benefit from it, other cultivators can also benefit from it. So without all these teachings and understanding being passed down, it's not easy. That's why my nature also learned from all those great things of the past that my nature have affinity with and all the teachers in kind. Then later on, my nature play its role, share and manifest. So in the same way, same cycle, everything is being shared, evolved, That's how it can grow. But the whole process is inconceivable in the sense that it's not straightforward, it's not direct. That it involves the condition, the unconditioned, it involves understanding of all this. So it's not easy. Well, hopefully, with today's condition and explanation, for those who can understand my nature, rejoice, and you can slowly reflect, contemplate on it to develop clear understanding so that in future, after this sasana, when you start to walk the bodhisattva way and the path and develop deep understanding, then you remember all this that my nature shared, then you can evolve your own understanding, then you can also progress beautifully. The Buddha teaches that to the world. The Buddha teaches that the world is filled with suffering. Actually, he teaches prevalence of suffering. He never say the world or life is suffering. The world is filled with suffering, it's true, prevalence of suffering. But what is suffering? Some people live smooth and easy life, complete with wealth, children, and good health. They do not feel that there is any suffering in the world. It is only when that person they love the most suddenly become ill or get injured or die that they experience suffering in life. Therefore, when we see the poor and the suffering, even as we empathize with them, we must witness suffering and recognize our blessing. So this is very true. Able to comprehend life is very important. When we go through life, we will be able to witness a lot of situation in life. Of course, it manifests under many situation and condition. Living beings are very, very varied and different. So each and everyone is so different. Each and everyone has their own karma, and it leads to their own manifestation. So you will be witnessing different beings having different karma, and most of them, if they don't cultivate with delusion and heedlessness, they will suffer. They will become afflicted, miserable. That's why you will witness a lot of suffering. But more important is the reality of life and existence, the First Noble Truth reality, which the Buddha expounded, the eight conditions, birth, old age, sickness and death, separation from loved one and prized possession, when you are with people whom you don't like, when things don't go your way, when you cannot get what you want, then when you are with people whom you don't like. Then in short, it is your delusion that condition you to grasp and cling onto the five aggregates of form and mind that develop affliction or suffering. So all these are the reality of life and existence. You live long enough, you will witness them, you will confront them. And without the Dhamma, without wisdom, you cannot go. You will be afflicted. That's why suffering is the end result. Through self-delusion, sakayadhiti, you grasp and cling to all this five aggregate form and mind, our human being, or the human form and mind, believing that this is real, this is what we are. That's how suffering comes to be. When you grasp and cling and hold on to it deludedly, like this physical body, then you won't worry about you getting old, getting sick and die. That's how you become afflicted. Suffering can arise. But when you realize through the meditative awakening that this physical body goes the way of nature, this is subject to the universal characteristics of impermanence. You grasp and cling, deludedly, evaluated suffering. And because it is impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity, therefore it's non-self, empty, not real, not what you think. So without this wisdom, you will corrupt, you will cling, you will hold, and you will be afflicted. So the Dhamma is a beautiful teaching that can allow you to understand all this. And the reason why the Buddha actually free is because when he saw the four signs that conditioned him to leave the palace in search for this teaching and truth, to overcome the three signs that he saw. He saw first an old man growing old. Then he saw a sick man. Then finally he saw a dead person. Then he realized old age sickness and death is so real. This is his problem. Despite what his father has given him, all the palace of the four seasons, all the materialistic benefits and all those things. Yeah, he got a good life, he has happy life. Then he reflected, he contemplated. Then he asked the attendant, what is this person? How come he is like that? He said, it's an old man. Then he said, what you mean? He said, each and every one of us, finally, we will deteriorate, decay, and grow old. Then get very sick, then finally die. Then he realized all this transient happiness and joy or good life is of no meaning. Then ultimately he has a problem. He cannot overcome old age, sickness, and death. That's why he decided to renounce the world, to seek an answer to all this. Then he take on the samana, the rope, where he saw a spiritual person who actually renounced himself and developed the meditation. So what happened is, after he developed the meditation, 6 years later, underneath the Bodhi tree, when he connected to, he developed the realization. Then he awakened because he realized this form and mind was never him. That's how he liberated and free. That's how his teaching come about. Anatta, non-self, empty nature of existence. Anatta doesn't mean totally nothingness. It's just not real, not a permanent unchanging entity, not what you think. So that liberates him. That is what the teaching is all about. That's what our Buddhist wisdom is all about. So when you meditate and awaken, you can also have the understanding and not to be deluded. So this part is very important. Okay, we go back to the sharing. So I will finish out this paragraph, then we can have a toilet break. Some people live smooth and easy life, completely well, children and good health, all the things we have gone through. But when somebody close to them, their loved ones, suddenly become ill or get injured or sick and die, then they experience suffering. Therefore, when we see the poor and the suffering, even as we empathize with them, we must witness suffering and recognize our blessing. That's why when you go the Bodhisattva way, when you witness all this, then you recognize your blessing because you came to this clear understanding. You take care of karma, karma take care of your life. You don't take care of karma, that is the end result. Suffering, affliction, misery. So that is life. So is the Dhamma inside our mind or is it external to us? Actually, the Dhamma is neither appearing nor disappearing, neither coming nor going. It is found in the midst of our daily life because it is so wondrously profound. Only by keeping the Buddha in our heart and manifesting the Dhamma in our action can we experience the truth, that the Dhamma is everywhere. So this is very true. So our true nature, our heart is different. That one is the meditative nature that can understand the Buddha Dhamma, that can awaken, that can develop the wisdom. So when you have that wisdom developed, then you will be able to apply that understanding into real life. Then you can experience and witness all this truth that the Dhamma is in every aspect of our life. That's the reason why I always share with you all, life itself is our greatest teacher. Dhamma is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. So this is the beauty. Why is it such? What is Dhamma? Dhamma is truth, universal truth. The universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self. These are the universal characteristics of all phenomena, and these are very, very powerful truth. When you awaken to it, you become enlightened. You root out your delusion, your ignorance. That's why when you are enlightened, mindful, heedful, throughout the day, every moment, every instant, you can witness them. It's like I always share with you, all, truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? There's this universal characteristics of impermanent, anicchang, dukkhang, anatta. They are everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Every moment, every instant, they manifest. Unless you can see them, awaken to them, you still don't have the true Dhamma understanding. The true Dhamma understanding is very strange, very marvelous. When you have that understanding, that wisdom, then you can see them, you can witness them. They are everywhere in the midst of life and nature, within and without. Yeah, basically, Dhamma is true. What is true? Truth is the nature's law that explains the reality of all things. That's why Dhamma is basically true. And the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths. They are very unique truth, because when you understand them, you become noble ones, and noble ones are enlightened ones. So when you understand the Noble Truth, you will become enlightened, noble ones. And the Buddha is also called the Tathagata. Tathata is suchness. So Tathagata is an expert in suchness. So because of that, he understands truth very, very profoundly. That's why he can teach the truth, the Dhamma. And he holds the embodiment of that truth. So he is the Tathagata, means expert in Tathata, suchness. That's why he can see things as they are, the reality within the moment, within the instant. That's the reason why his teaching is so simple and yet so profound. He told the monk very simple. Whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. And these causes and conditions, he explained how they arise. Mainly karma. That's why he said you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, condition is supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. The fifth daily contemplation. So when Asanji repeat these two stanzas to this Sariputta to be, he became enlightened to the first stage of sainthood straight away upon hearing. How can he do that? It's because of his past and because of the Buddha's ability to summarize truth or teaching into such simple understanding. And my nature during the early days when I cultivate very strange, when I read that stanza, my nature also can understand and awaken, no different. But I straight away understand. The Buddha say, whatever that arise means all things, all phenomena. There are causes and conditions behind. Means what? We are in the existential world, isn't it? Condition arising world. So whatever that arise, follow nature's law. When the condition is set, like the Buddha say, then things will go that way. Cannot be other way. That's why this is the reality, the truth. Nature's phenomenon and condition, it cannot be otherwise. If you want things your way, which is not nature's way, you suffer, you become miserable. That understanding to me is very straightforward, very direct, very simple. But hardly anybody has that understanding. They can repeat and maybe proclaim that stanza. But how many people really have the understanding? If you can understand, you awaken. You will break free from the self-delusion, sakkayadity. Means you will come to understand this form of mind is dependent, originating, impermanent. That's why it's not a permanent unchanging entity. Therefore, it is non-self, anatta. And because it's empty, non-self, and impermanent, there is no reality. Empty nature of existence. This is how you can develop the wisdom to awaken. And this is profound Dhamma. Okay, so with this, we will end. Yeah. So now we will open up for meditation reporting, followed by whatever question.
I have a question, but yeah.
Ah, good. You can start off. Yes.
But, awareness and composing the mind, relative, because I spoke with another hacker coming.
Yeah.
Usually, the normal term people use is for meditation, they compose your mind. So,
okay.
Back to me, and when you said, when I told them that be aware, is it the same as compose your mind?
Okay. So you want to develop the understanding, huh? That's your question, huh? Okay, thank you, Sadhu, for the good question. You see, the problem with a lot of Buddhist practitioner or so-called Buddhist cultivator is they don't really understand what sati is. And when we use word like mindful, aware, it becomes like very difficult to comprehend. That's why they come up with another term which maybe they heard from somebody. Is mindfulness the same as composed mind? Or is awareness and the composed mind same? So what is your understanding? Based on your true understanding, so I will not waste time by going directly into it to explain to you. We can simply develop the understanding through inquiry. What is a composed mind? Like last time they used the word mindfulness. It has two parts. Mind is fullness. But they never inquire full of what? If it's full of thought, then that is not sati. That is heedless thinking. That's why that word is very important. If you choose the wrong word, you cannot understand. Then because I understand, when somebody asked me this or actually questioned me back, it was my last teacher, my last guy. He said, "You Buddhist very funny, he said. You use the word mindfulness. That mind there already knock you off. The awareness is before the knowing. There is no mind. But he didn't say it's before the knowing. He said it doesn't involve the thinking mind. But he cannot explain it that way. He just know that the awareness, he overuse awareness, has nothing to do with mind, is it? Because he has that nature, he understands that. Then I explained to him, I say, the Buddhists, when they coined this word, they didn't coin it properly. Mindfulness means mind in fullness. Full of what? I said, fully aware. Again, say it, fully aware. Why would you use the word mindfulness? The mind that is fully aware means without thought. Then you are already mindful. So with this understanding, now we compare a composed mind. If your mind is composed, let's say, based on one, because maybe you have faith, that's why your mind becomes composed, quiet, peaceful. But it may not be in sati, because that composed mind is born of faith. Understand? So the spiritual faculty of faith, when it is there without any movement, then during that time, maybe that composed mind is peaceful, collected, composed, don't have much thought. But you must understand, it is not aware. Do you understand? Because the faith can be there, but the awareness is another spiritual faculty. That composed mind could be born of faith. When you have faith, your mind becomes very composed. There is no doubt. You don't go and think. You do not doubt. You are composed because you don't have doubt. You have faith. So that faith brings forth the composed mind. But the mind that is composed may not have virya, may not be in sati, may not be aware. So that's why it's still different. So explain to them, don't try to make life difficult. When you are not clear, say you are not clear. You want to understand. And then very easy. Can you be silent without thought? The moment you are without thought, you are aware. Because mind can only do one thing at a time. True or not? Either you are lost in thought, preoccupied what you are thinking, or you are completely silent without thought. When you are completely silent without thought, you can be aware, isn't it? If without thought, the awareness surfaces. But how many people can be without thought? Because of your mental hindrance. Because people lack spiritual faculty. They never train their mundane mind. That's why they can never be in a state of without thought. That's why I say relax, maintain awareness, silence everything, don't try to know, don't do anything. Then you will understand what sati is. Awareness before the knowing. You just aware. Before the perception, before the concept, the idea. Like when you look at something, it could be a poster, it could be a Buddha Rupa, or whatever. But that perception of that thing is not there yet. Like a baby, when it perceives something, the pure perception, the memory doesn't come in and interfere. It does not coin that words, the concept, the perception. You see things as they are. And that is awareness. That is sati. That is mindfulness. Then you are mindful, you are aware, a specific phenomenal awareness. That awareness and the thing become one, no word. That's why awareness is mindfulness, is awareness before the knowing, before the arising of the perception, aggregate of mind, the thinking, the sankhara, the mental activity, the content of consciousness. When all these go in, it become a thought. That's why you must listen to that video, the sharing, the difference between mindfulness and consciousness. When a person is conscious, he may not be mindful. We have gone through that video, is very good. I think Amy tried to attempt to answer it, and she got it right. So that is very beautiful. Most human beings are conscious of life. That's why you are a conscious being, isn't it? When you wake up, you become conscious, isn't it? Then you go about living life, isn't it? That's why I say they are conscious of life. But are they mindful of life? Are they truly living life? Most of them are conscious and lost in thought. They are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life. So much so, they never get to live life. They never can be silent and within the moment to experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. Within that silence, the mind is very sensitive, fully aware without thought. Nothing inside there. That's why all movement, activity, it can be aware. But it is not preoccupied with anything. It is not lost in thought. That's why it can maintain full awareness. That's why when you are completely silent without thought, you can meditate. Yeah, all the arising of the form and mind, the sankhara, the perception, the emotion, the whatever feeling, you can become aware. Then you can know clearly how it arises, how the mind stir, react, and create all this wrong view through self-delusion, through sakkaya ditti, and how wrong view condition wrong thought, and how wrong thought condition suffering and misery. That's why I prefer to teach the opposite. They always want to teach people what is right thought, and they always say the four Brahma Vihara state because they thought that is the only right thought. But no, right thought has very deep meaning, very wide scope. But I prefer to teach the opposite where nobody teach. What is wrong thought that is more important? If you know what is wrong thought, then it's very easy to cultivate, to meditate, to abandon it. If you don't know what is wrong thought, then you can't. So the nearest that they have come to is, they always say, wrong thought are thought that has the ill roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So to me, if you really don't have the understanding, you are not explaining anything. Because you just quote the three evil roots, roots of all evil. But when you have the understanding, you will define wrong thought differently. Whatever thought that has the evils of greed, hatred, and delusion, when they arise, they condition certain things. That's why, what is wrong thought is very important. Wrong thought are thought that will condition your suffering, your misery, your fear, your envy, your jealousy, your emotion, your self-delusion, your selfishness, your emotional negativity. These are wrong thoughts. Thoughts that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamenting. These are all wrong thoughts. That's why I say, whenever you are not happy and not peaceful, the wrong thoughts are there. The evil roots are there. And this way of definition is very useful. You can use it to meditate, to cultivate. Because whenever you are not peaceful, the wrong thoughts are there. The moment you are unhappy, the evil roots are there. And what are wrong thoughts? Thoughts that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow. So human being is so funny, like I discussed with my daughter before the class start. They worry a lot. Whenever there is situation which they call problem, they worry, they panic. Especially now with the COVID-19 pandemic, they will ask Dr. Janta, "So Janta, how are doctor? How are? Can I die? Is this dangerous? Why are you going to worry about all this?" That's why Janta also start to know. He said, "Brother, they teach very good. Relax, away, silent. Do not panic. Don't fear. But no amount of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation can help you understanding can help you free your mind. These are negative mind states that make you deluded, heedless, and condition your suffering and misery and lower your immune system. That's why fear is a very negative energy field. Worry is a restlessness mind of state. And all these are mental hindrances. How do they arise? Because you lack spiritual faculty. You are not mindful. You let your thought project. If you have spiritual faculty, the mental hindrances, the restlessness cease, the worry, the fear, the anxiety all cease. You can just be relaxed, silent, and aware. Aware means no thought. No thought means no word, no concept. Then where can there be any emotion? Like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, fear, worry, all this cannot exist unless you go and think and project your thought. Fear, worry, anxiety is the mundane mind's creation. So when you understand all this, you will understand what sati is, what mindfulness is, then you can explain to people and you can develop the cultivation yourself. So hopefully with this explanation, Janta, it's clearer. So listen to this sharing again, then later on your friend, if he wants to understand, you can get them to listen to this, or you try your very best to stabilize your understanding and explain to them. Based on what I explained today, you should get better understanding. It will also help you. And, so you know now the difference between awareness and the composed mind. Because awareness is without thought. When you are mindful, means you are aware before the arising of thought, before you perceive, before the activity of mind come in, your views, opinion, and conditioning come in and interfere. That moment is, like the Buddha said, in the seeing, it's just the pure seeing consciousness. No one to see. No concept, no word, nothing. The pure direct seeing. That is meditation. So during that time, it's like the baby without the memory, without the words, the concept, is sitting as they are. Whatever you describe, the color, the painting, all the same, but without words. Then learn to see with that understanding, like this so-called microphone that I hold. I like to use this example because people don't see this microphone. Because we are so conditioned by our education. Microphone, straight away, the image of this mic or microphone come about. Means you take for granted the image for the actual thing. The actual thing is without word, without concept, without the word microphone. It's just this thing, without word, without description. You see, clearly see. That is the beginning of real seeing, direct seeing. The silent mind see without word. Not easy. Like Krishnamurti said, can you just see nature? Observe nature. Can you just look at the tree, the flower, without words, without creating anything? Just that pure seeing. Be aware. Specific phenomenal awareness. Then you want to know, you can know. But before that, when you see, you just see. So to meditate is to understand this. Then you can meditate. Then you can see. And your seeing is all the direct seeing, the pure seeing. You don't see like a heedless human being anymore with words, with concept, with idea, with views and opinion and conditioning. Then you stir and react very fast. The heedless do a lot of this thing. But if you are mindful, heedful and aware with the Dhamma understanding, you can accept the reality of the moment. People are just the way they are. Before they understand, they were sitting that way. That's why the three levels of seeing, Kan San, Si San. 看山不是山 second level. At third level, you return to normalcy. 看山又是山 means you no need to argue with people. The mundane seeing the first level, 看山是山 if they come and say that is mountain, yeah, mountain, no problem. Means no quarrel, no misunderstanding, no argument, at peace. Then the enlightened one come, pure seeing, direct seeing, 看山不是山, the sun, mountain, is a concept, is a word. Then the direct seeing, there is no word, 看山不是山. You can agree, yeah, 不是山, where you can see things as it is. That's why the Zen master, when the student come and say, Master, I'm enlightened. Then he point at the table and say, what is that? The student answered, table, he whacking. You enlightened and you still got a table there. Means you don't have the direct seeing, the pure seeing. Means you still don't understand what the true Dhamma is, what enlightenment is. Then in the third stage, means when your wisdom has stabilized and everything has come back to normalcy again, then you can accept both, no more duality. Then the third stage of seeing is when you return to normalcy with the stability of wisdom, 看山又是山, is you see back like normal human being. Yeah, mountain is mountain, no problem. Because you are within the conditioned world. That is life. And within life, there is such thing as mountain. There is such thing as Dhamma. There is such thing as life, existence, human being. Birth and death, karma. That is the aspect of the teaching that cultivators seldom understand. You have to understand both the conditioned Dhamma and the unconditioned Dhamma, then only you can live life, exist within. That's why you must have that mindfulness, the spiritual faculty, the wisdom, the understanding. Then you can manifest in both sides. You silence your mind, then you can realize the oneness nature, means specific phenomenal awareness to live life, and spacious awareness without a center to experience the oneness nature when you are completely silent and still. That is the meditative realization. Then when you arise and manifest as a form and mind, you enter the existential world, you live life, that is the conditioned world. And conditioned world has duality. Conditioned world has the law of karma. That's why there is a right duty with regards to this form and mind. You cannot simply do things. That's why there is noble eightfold path, four noble truth, reality of life and existence. There is a self. There are living beings. So all this doesn't contradict at all. When you understand both sides, you can manifest and live life in accordance. That's why life becomes beautiful, meaningful, and wonderful. So this is the meaning. Chanta. Hopefully with this explanation, you can develop better understanding and help your friend to understand better. Okay?
Okay. Yeah. I think I need to listen back this recording. It's very good.
Yeah.
Much deeper than I think I should know.
much deeper, yes.
Yes, without this explanation, it's not easy for you to really go into it, because Dhamma is like that. I have to approach it from many directions. That's why your question is very good, very important. If people don't ask questions, you all cannot learn. You go and watch the video, the difference between awareness and consciousness. I just sent out recently again, I think this is the third time I sent out. Yeah, it's very useful, and that one was a very good question by one of the Kayamita. Then when I explain that, you understand clearly what awareness is and what consciousness is. You may be conscious of life, but you are not aware. Yeah, awareness is a that thing, that nature, the true mind that is away from inside. It doesn't involve the thought process. Nothing to do with thinking. Whereas the conscious mind, the person that is conscious, has a lot of thought process, thinking. Okay?
Because from last Tuesday, about the discussion between Brother Tio and self-coaching,
yeah.
He also hit a lot, and then said, conscious, awareness, relaxed, and aware.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Work hand in hand, Brother Tio.
Yeah.
I was deeply contemplating, and that's where question comes in again, Brother Tio.
Yeah,
thank
yeah.
Thank you so much.
So you bring out a very good point. When you are relaxed, you will be aware. Understand? But when you are relaxed, you don't think. You only think when you are not relaxed. When you are relaxed means you are at ease. Nothing bother you. Nothing disturb you. That's why you are in a state of relax. Very peaceful. Very quiet. Very still. That's why when you are tired, you naturally relax. But a person who can relax before they are tired is a cultivator. Of course, some yoga practitioners also, they train themselves to do this relaxation. They also can relax. Then some people need to do qigong to relax. For us, cultivator, because we are throughout the day mindful, aware, we are naturally relaxed. Then we are very sensitive. The moment the slightest stress very subtle type of dislike before the word dislike is even more subtle than that, the movement that you want to react and stir it, but before you already know it, like it's slight movement inside there is a type of like very subtle stress inside that, and you know that is already itself not relaxed, then you will know how to be mindful, be with it, aware, and relax into it. Then you are very sensitive, you can detect them. Whatever tension, tightness, or stress within your whole form and mind, you can detect them. When you are not peaceful, when you are not relaxed, you are mindful because you can detect them. That's why you are straight away silent, maintain awareness, and let things be. Then you do the meditative way, the third way, be with it, then it will cease. You have to do that many times. Like when emotion arise, fear arise, anxiety arise, stay with it. Don't reject it. Don't suppress it. Don't try to control it. Forget about it. Where that emotion is condition arising, not you. Doesn't belong to you. It's not intrinsic in you, like fear, worry, anxiety, anger, hatred. They are dependent originating, condition arising because of wrong view. Because you stir your mind, you react to wrong view. So stay with it, like the Buddha said, maintain awareness, then see how. If you don't give it any more negative thought, negative energy, then it ceases to be like the flower. The very flowering of that flower is the very ending of that flowering of that thought. The thought is like a flower. You let it flower, the emotion, the anger, until no more energy, like the flower, cannot flower anymore. It will decay, then it will cease. So witness that. Meditation is to be aware, to witness that. Observe. Then you realize, hey, if I don't do anything, anger ceases to be. Fear ceases to be. Then the original mind is peaceful, tranquil, still. This is what meditation is on. Then you realize, defilement, I don't have to do anything. I just have to be with my awareness. Then that defilement is to be. Well, that defilement is dependent originating, condition arising, not intrinsic within my nature. Then you start to realize whatever that is not intrinsic is condition arising phenomenon. That's like sankara anicca, sankara dukkha. Then the Buddha's teaching become very clear. Sankara anatta. That's why rupang vedana sanya sankara vinyana anicang dukkang anatta. Very clear. Because that meditative third way and the fourth way give rise to the wisdom. But you have to try it, the third way, be with it. All of emotion that arise, your fear, your anger, your hatred, your negativity, your mind state, stay with it. Even anxiety or whatever, stay with it. Silence your mind completely. Relax. Maintain awareness. Then let it cease. Then when you go through that whole phase of experiencing that cessation, means that emotion cease, then you realize, hey, anger was never me, because it's dependent originating, arise and pass away. When I don't do anything, don't feed it anymore with wrong thought and negativity or energy, it ceases to be. That's why all this can manifest because you fear, you go and worry, you go and think, you go and do something. And who is doing? The thought, out of fear, deludedly, go and think. Then they try to analyze. They try to reason. Why am I this way? Why can't I just don't want to get angry? There is the thought. When the thought is active, reasoning, trying to analyze, it creates more sankara. It's not aware. That's why it cannot free. It cannot realize that the true mind, which is beautiful, stillness and tranquility, is without all this mind state. That's why all this emotion, sankara, mind state, or anger, fear, hatred, they are not intrinsic within our true mind or true nature. So when you realize this, you like wake up. Wow, all this while, the Buddha's teaching was so beautiful. That's why all these are having the universal characteristics of anicang dukkha anatta. Then when you realize this, you can never be deceived anymore. Then when anger arise or stir through habitual tendency, means not completely rooted out yet, because wisdom haven't stabilized yet, you will come to know. Then you will understand clearly that anger was never you. Emotion was never you. Hatred was never you. Fear was never you. So why must you do anything? When they arise, just aware. Finish. Cease. Just let it be. They come and they go. Stay with your true mind. Stay with your silent mind. Be aware that everything ceases. Then you realize the true mind itself is already peaceful, tranquil, stillness. That is the meditative mind, that is the silent mind, that is the one that can understand all this. And then it will develop the wisdom, born of Dhamma understanding. That's why all of the words of the Buddha after that become very clear. Sankara anicang, sankara dukkang, Dhamma anatta. Every phenomenon is like that. Every of the aggregate of mind is like that. Every mental state is like that. Then you stay with the true mind, the awareness. That is the one that will understand and awaken. So your understanding will continue to grow and evolve when you continue to reflect on all this, then listen attentively and develop the understanding. If possible, you write it down. After you write it down, you read again, it becomes different again. Because for me, I don't have to write, because this thing become very clear to me, my past cultivation and my understanding and awakening. I saw it and I no need to remember anything. But for you all, you have to write it down, I realize. Because I realize not easy for most people to have the understanding. And to them, it's like, this is so abstract. But to my nature, it's so clear. Nothing is abstract at all. So try it out, write it out, then read through what you write. It's based on what I say, you transcribe it, then you write it out. Yeah. When you write it out and you read again, it's so different. Because when you listen, your wisdom not at this level, when you don't have the galaxy and the awakening, all these are like some form of important Dhamma that you want to remember. Understand? Yeah. Then you can reflect and contemplate, and they like very very meaningful. Then it starts to like become more clear and more clear. But you cannot remember it because you don't have the direct seeing yourself, you don't have the awakening yourself, and you are not familiar with this. So after a while, maybe half a day, one day, you cannot remember really. Never mind. Don't try to remember. Your Dhamma is like that. Wisdom is different. When you have, means you have. No need to remember. But it's not a memory. It's not knowledge. Knowledge, you need to remember. Dhamma, no need to remember. So when you reflect, contemplate, and you write down, and you understand it, then you apply it until it becomes a part of you, then whenever you encounter a situation, you will understand. You will know how to spontaneously manifest and explain all this and describe all this. But to do that, you need stability. You need to constantly reflect, contemplate, inquire, and go into life, cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Then constantly contemplate, reflect until very, very clear. Then only the wisdom stabilizes, and then only you can share, you can express it, you can explain it, like what my nature did. Before that, not easy. That's why over the years of sharing, I realized it's not easy. Even now, very few people can express it. You can ask even Song, Po Cheng, they all, even in video. They know what that thing is, but they cannot put it into words so smoothly like what I use and how I explain it, because the stability not there yet. And that one take time, not so easy. It take really a while for it to stabilize, then become part of you, then until that thing become with your nature. Yoniso manasikara, spontaneously it will arise without prompting. We have the understanding just surface. So you act according to this wisdom. You no longer act according to memory, the views, the opinion, the knowledge, no more. So this is very beautiful because tonight, Jayanta, thank you so much for your good condition. I managed to explain it again, and this time I approach it differently again. And it's going to be very useful, very important for you all. Okay? Sadhu.
Okay, I just say what I noticed in the morning. Just a short one. In the morning, I found that, I mean, it's not a clear mind. It's like, it's normally I didn't notice this one. I will just follow what the mind's talking. But for these few mornings, I noticed just that day, I told Vanatio that I wanted to be more aware on the what you say, right? And then because it's like something I don't understand, so I try to be, if I realize, I try to be relaxed and relax like that lah. Day life lah. So in the morning when I woke up, I found that my ear is like continuously having like conversation now, or maybe some flashback or something is happening, but actually the external in the morning is very quiet and everything. It's like I don't think, oh okay, this one is keep on talking non-stop right now, but actually in reality it's very still, and actually no sound at all in the morning. I mean, birds chirping and everything, but it's like the mind is continuously talking.
So I explain this part first, it will help you listen. When you are not silent inside, like you say, your ear there continuously chattering and developing that type of maybe dialogue or whatever the thought process that has been ongoing. It could be habitual, it could be whatever conditioning, then it will be there. Sometimes it's coming. So when it's there, you cannot actually listen, because you are not silent inside. But because you have heard what I said, you need to be aware. then you try to be aware. You didn't silence inside completely. You try to be aware of the birds chirping. You try to be aware of external, the vibration or whatever. Then if it's a morning where you just arise, then you start to become conscious. Your senses operate. If you are silent within, then your senses operate. It becomes very sensitive. The chipping of the bird, everything come into your awareness. You don't have to go and look for it outside. Then the rain or whatever, this one, Amy, they all did a lot. Even I think Alicia, they all put in there, they know. So the awareness is so different when it's just aware. It's without word, that whole thing. Especially the sudden rain, no sound, no word, nothing. It's just the awareness of that vibration or that thing without words. This is what you must stabilize. So don't try to rationalize with your thought, with your thinking. Otherwise, you can still get trapped and you cannot go in. Because the main key to developing this awareness is silent within, completely silent. The ear, whatever sound or what, let it arrive. Yeah, this could be your conditioning, your habitual tendency, and your karmic thing. Just let it be. What is more important is the moment you become conscious, you wake up, you silence everything, relax and maintain awareness. Don't try to know. Whatever arises, let it arise. Until your awareness, the silent mind, become very stable. Until you really able to be silent inside. That is the beginning of meditation, awareness based. So try it. Tell me. Otherwise, you are too active using your thought. You have improved. At least you recall. You need to be aware. But then you try to use the thinking mind to be aware of the chipping of the bird and all those things. That's why you try to describe to your knowledge that in actual fact, you say it's inside still tranquil. But you heard about this, but you never experienced this. That's why you will describe all this, thinking that you know. But you cannot do it because you are not silent within. So the key is, are you silent inside? Completely silent means not only no speech or don't talk, no chattering, no dialogue, no verbalization, nothing. Completely still. Means whatever that arises, the sankhara, unfinished activity, let it arise and let it cease. It will slow down and cease. When you don't give it any more meaning, it's just like anger, hatred. When you just aware, silent, be with it, like Gordon, Gordon did very well. Be with it, with that nature, silent, aware. Then everything will fall into place. You will realize your true mind, which is silent, awareness, that nature within. Realize that. That is meditation. Okay? Tammy, can follow?
Can.
That one very important. Listen again and write it down. Then do it with understanding. You will progress. So you should thank Jayanta for nominating you.
Jayanta. Actually, what I want to say is that if I notice that. Otherwise, I will continue go into the, you know, the...
You like my wife say, the cow, the nose, pull you along. That thought proliferation pull you along. You are lost in thought, preoccupied with that thinking, which is fruitless thinking. Because that one like draw you all over because you are not aware at all. That thought keep on arising. That is heedless living. When the spiritual faculty are not there, you don't even have any stability of mindfulness. That's why you cannot stop anything. When you have the stability of mindfulness, the moment you're aware, it ceases. Then the awareness takes over. Then the thought cannot move, cannot come again. But most people cannot reach that state of stability of mindfulness. They can't do anything with the thought. They want to stop thinking, think more. You cannot suppress thought. You cannot don't want thought. Thought is dependent originating, means respond to memory. When you accumulate to memory, unfinished business, worry, fear, anxiety, problem, that it will manifest. It will arise, respond to that worry, that fear, the anxiety, the unfinished situation of life or problem, and it will arise. That's why sankhara arise because of avijja, avijja paccaya sankhara. So when it keep on arising, what must you do? Relax into it, silent, don't do anything. And when you don't feed it anymore with anxiety, worry, unhappiness, or try to solve it, that's why don't do anything. Don't try to know, or don't try to do anything. Just let it be. It doesn't mean that you are not meditating. When you are not doing anything, you are meditating. Because when you are not doing anything, means you are not allowing the mundane mind to arise. You are going back to your true mind. You are letting the sankhara activity slow down on its own. Like the third way, aware, then let it cease. Let whatever emotion that arises, as I relax into whatever mind state that arises, let it cease. Relax, maintain awareness, and stabilize it. Then your meditation will take off. So this part, the words are very simple, but the doing is something you all have to go in and try. Po Cheng last time also need half an hour plus to let that thing happen. Then the shift of consciousness happened, then she know, oh, that is what Brother Teo meant. So sometimes it may take up to 1 hour, depending on what your karmic thing is and your understanding is. But most people, after a while, determination, the faith, the training, it will come. Even Jin Hao did it. Finally, he understands what this thing is. So many Kayamitas actually who strive on faithfulness and develop all this, they are able to understand all this. So for you, I believe you can. But Jayanta will be faster. Jayanta will be faster. Yeah, he really now more full of faith and more serious, and he wants to know, and he has the intelligence. When he understands, he moves very fast. Because he no longer like last time. Last time, so conditioned. Everything refer to the conditioning, like very difficult to accept new thing. So now, he starts to see the old way doesn't transform him, doesn't change him. But the new understanding, he's a doctor, he know, relax, aware, is so different. You become so peaceful, so tranquil, so still, and the stirring of the mundane mind or the heedless thinking all disappear. That's why this awareness-based meditation is so different from the old type of meditation that they do, method, technique, and all those things, thought-based. So this one develops the awareness to go back to your true mind, your true nature, to develop the understanding. Okay, so with this, hopefully, you all can develop better understanding. And it will help many of you, especially those who are still quite new. You want to go into this, listen to all the sharing. Today one is very good. Okay, anything else, Tammy? No more, okay. Also 10:37 already, I think we need to end. Maybe we will do the sharing of merits. Before that, we will rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I would like to thank Dr. Jayanta for the good question and Tammy for the good sharing that created a condition for me to share. So do listen to this today's sessions. Sharing is very useful. It can help many Kayamita to develop the understanding of what awareness-based meditation is, especially the beginning, the first 17 minutes when before I start for meditation. After chanting, I think I spoke for a while. So total, I checked my handphone was about 17 to 18 minutes like that. then only I start the meditation. So that chanting part you can ignore. You go to the instruction. I think the instruction should be about 10 or 11 minutes. Well, the instruction very good. How to develop the understanding of awareness-based meditation. And how to develop the meditation from the understanding. Okay, so together with Jayanta sharing and the Tammy side that I explained further, it should be more than enough for you all, and it can help you all to progress.